views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff. In other words, the views expressed on the following program are those of the host. Broadcasting live from Planet Madison, where everything is beyond parody, this is Upfront with Vicki McKenna, the voice of reason in a city of chaos. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll free at 877-235-1310 or email Vicki at WIBA.com. Now filling in for Vicki, here's Brian Schimming on News Talk 1310 WIBA and WIBA.com.
Welcome back. As I mentioned before, we're only on until 5:30 today as we pick up the Milwaukee Brewers as they finish their three-game series at the Cincinnati Reds. Tomorrow, we're out an hour early, actually, at 5 p.m. as we pick up coverage of the Packers at the Kansas City Chiefs, and then again on Friday at 5:30 as the Brewers take on Philadelphia. A reminder for the weekend, Saturday, 5 p.m., Badger game day, 10 o'clock. The game is at 10 o'clock. That's 10 o'clock at night. UW football versus UNLV. 10 o'clock, but Badger game day, which is always great, on at 5 o'clock on Saturday. So you always want to catch that. And then Sunday at noon, the Brewers at Philadelphia. So you'll want to be with us for all that. In the 4:30 hour, we'll talk to a Clear Channel reporter who's on site at what was a hostage situation. We are told now that somebody is in custody there. We don't know a lot more than that, but we'll get a report at 4:35. Also in that segment, I'll be giving away two $25 gift certificates to the Continental Fitchburg, which is now open for lunch, I might add, so you could use them at lunch as well. We'll do that in the 4:35 segment. But first, we love talking about racial achievement, and we like talking about racial achievement gaps in the schools. The problem has been that people do a lot of talking, but they don't do a lot of doing. And for the second year in a row, there's a comparison of the educational systems in Wisconsin and the state of Florida, indicating policymakers in the Badger State maybe have something to learn from their peers down in Florida. A new report released by the McIver Institute suggests that perhaps Wisconsin would do well to follow Florida's lead in at least a few areas. The author of that report, Dr. Matthew Ladner, he is with the Goldwater Institute in Arizona, and he joins me live by phone. Dr. Ladner, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Matthew Ladner, second year in a row you've looked at this issue, and as I said in the intro, boy, we love talking about this, and other than just saying, you know what, let's put a couple extra zeros on that government check, we don't, to local school districts, we don't seem to do much.
Yeah, Brian, I heard you talking about the Badgers earlier, and I'm a big college football fan. I'm a University of Texas at Austin graduate, and I was one of the people who was hoping that the University of Texas would actually join the Big Ten during all that. And I got to tell you that, when comparing Wisconsin, which, of course, is the heart of Big Ten country, not in football, but in something that's a lot more important than football, which is teaching kids how to read, Wisconsin is getting taken to school by an SEC state, and that state is Florida. In Florida, in 2009, on the nation's report card, which is a national set of testing data given by the federal government to samples of students in all 50 states, Florida's Hispanic students scored higher than the statewide average for all students in Wisconsin. This is a test of reading in fourth grade, which, of course, is critical. Because if you don't learn how to read early, you typically don't learn how to read at all. Florida's minority students are scoring profoundly higher than comparable students in Wisconsin, and so much so that the Florida's Hispanic students are actually outscoring the statewide average for all students in Wisconsin. So there's a great deal to learn from what they're doing right in Florida.
Well, and let's talk about that, because it seems as though education policy in general, but also it seems as though the establishment answer, the answer we always seem to come back to, is a non-answer, and that is to keep shoveling more money into the system. And yet there's evidence out there that that's really not the answer, or it's certainly not the complete answer. Perhaps reform is the answer.
Absolutely. You know, the bottom line is that over the last 40 years, state lawmakers around the country have steadily increased per pupil funding above and beyond the rate of inflation for many decades. So a public school administrator today is spending at a level after you adjust for inflation and per pupil that is about twice as high as what they would have been spending in the early 1970s. And the problem is that while we keep putting more money in, we're not getting more out. I haven't met a person yet that thinks that the schools are twice as effective today as they were back in 1970. I know lots of people who think the opposite. But the reality is that our long-term testing data that we can look at show that basically our test scores have been flat, but our spending has been way up. So those people who want to pursue improvement in K-12 have got to understand that by far the biggest opportunity that we have is getting more bang for our buck. We are spending at a level that was beyond the dreams of avarice for a school administrator in the early 1960s or 70s, and yet we're not getting results. The answer to that is not to put yet more money in. The answer is to pursue a whole host of systemic reforms to get more out of the money that we're putting in.
Well, and in Florida's case, I'm down in Florida on business a couple times a year. You have a lot of Hispanic students in that state. You have a growing number of Hispanic students in just about every state, really. I suppose it would be not unfair to say. Florida's effort began back in 1999. It combined accountability and transparency and parental choice, among the other things. A couple of the recommendations: providing transparency in the evaluation of schools and teachers. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, probably the keystone to what Florida did, and there was no one single magic bullet. It was really a comprehensive approach. But the key reform was truth in advertising. In Florida, they switched from a system that ranked schools 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, and no one knew whether 5 was better than 1 or 1 was better than 5. They switched that to a system that graded schools A, B, C, D, or F. Okay, and they did that based on a formula that was one-half based on overall scores on the state test, which is the FCAT in Florida, and 25% on overall student learning gains over time. And the final 25% are the student learning gains of the bottom 25% of students from last year's test. Okay, so what a school administrator in Florida figures out when they do the game theory on this is that if they want something that's better than a D, they're going to have to get their lowest performing students making gains in the right direction. Okay, this is a very simple, elegant system, but that really makes those bottom scoring kids the most important kids in the schools. Around that reform, and by the way, this was a shock to the state, telling people, you know, the truth. You know, the truth was, is back in the late 90s, about half of Florida's fourth graders scored below basic in reading, according to the nation's report card. The state basically came out and told them the truth. The truth is that your son's school or your daughter's school is not doing well and not equipping kids to with the basic academic skills they need to succeed in life. Along with that, what we saw, by the way, was a rallying of community support around those D&F schools and a radical amount of improvement. People were literally showing up to do volunteer work to tutor kids to get them up to speed. In addition to that central reform, which is, you know, kind of transparency with teeth, you saw a number of things: statewide parental choice programs, alternative teacher certification. Half of all new teachers in Florida are now coming through alternative routes that don't require them to take 30 hours of coursework at a college of education. And, you know, there's a lot of retired engineers that might like to teach a math class, but we currently shun. We don't want any of those people teaching math, and that's a shame because we need all the high-quality teachers we can get. But also financial incentives for success and some sanctions for failure. When you put all these things together, what we saw was a radical improvement in student literacy. The fourth grade illiteracy rate in Florida dropped about 40% since 1998, and huge amounts of improvement. So the combination of these things together has really moved the needle on academic achievement in Florida, so much so that we find a state, you know, that is majority-minority in its K-12 population, that spends below the national average. It's a state that doesn't have a state income tax and doesn't spend a lot, nonetheless has started to outperform a lot of states like Wisconsin. Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the former Democratic senator from New York, used to joke that performance on the nation's report card is perfectly correlated with proximity to the Canadian border. That was a joke about the racial achievement gap. Florida is actually, on a statewide scale, has seriously narrowed the racial achievement gap and done things that a lot of people 10 years ago would have told us was impossible.
Dr. Matthew Ladner is my guest. He is the director of research for the Goldwater Institute. He is also the author of a new report issued by the John K. McIver Institute for Public Policy. Matthew, a couple of the other things. You talk about empowering parents to make and finance educational choices. We do have kind of a one-size-fits-all system out there, and yet we have a lot of school choice or charter school or options that on the whole seem to work pretty well. Is this part of it? It's not so much about competition, but just giving parents choices on what they can do with their own kids.
Absolutely. Nobody knows the needs of a particular child better than their parents. And part of what needs to happen to improve outcomes is to match each individual child with the best school to serve their needs. And that simply will not happen as much as it needs to in a system where people have geographically assigned public schools. It's an outdated way of doing business, and it's something that we really need to update for the 21st century. In Florida, they have gone further than any other state in promoting parental choice. They have the nation's largest voucher program, which is called the McKay Scholarship Program. It's only for children with disabilities. They also have a very large scholarship tax credit program that gives scholarships to low-income students statewide. They have a very strong charter school law that is opening charter schools statewide. And they're also the nation's leader in virtual education. In Florida, students are actually deciding, do I want to take calculus with Mrs. Smith, or would I like to take it through the Florida Virtual School? And state funding is actually following the child to where they go. So, they've actually dipped their toe into competition down to the course level, and this is all for the good. What we've seen in all these instances is that these programs are helping parents match their child to the programs they need or that are best for them, and the result has been improvement.
Dr. Ladner, in our last two or three minutes here, your final point is addressing an array of issues through effective literacy instruction. This almost the biggest one of all of them in many ways, because it is such a challenge across a lot of demographics.
It is. And the first step and my advice to those of you living in Wisconsin is to recognize that you have a problem. In Wisconsin, only 46% of children who are eligible for a free reduced price lunch based on their family income score at basic or better on fourth grade reading. Basically, half of your low-income children in Wisconsin are illiterate. That doesn't mean they can't read a stop sign. It means they can't read a Dr. Seuss book as a fourth grader. That cannot be allowed to continue. That same figure for Florida is 64%. They are doing profoundly better than you are in teaching kids how to read. So the first step is to recognize that you have a problem. The Thomas B. Fordham Foundation put out a report a couple of years ago that noted, you know, they studied all 50 states and looked at all the technical little exemptions that states could do to kind of worm out of accountability from No Child Left Behind. They actually ranked Wisconsin as number one in worming out of accountability under No Child Left Behind. Wisconsin had the most lax system with the most loopholes of any of the states they studied. So this is ultimately not doing kids any favors. So, you know, first and foremost, my advice to you is that Wisconsin needs to get very serious to recognize that they have a problem, to recognize that they can no longer coast on sort of happy days demographics from the 1960s. You know, about a quarter of students in Wisconsin now are minorities, and that percentage is growing. You have a serious problem. There are answers, but you have to have the courage to implement them.
Dr. Matthew Ladner, the director of research at the Goldwater Institute, he has produced a new report for the John K. McIver Institute for Public Policy. What's the next step? I mean, it seems as though here in our final minute or so that we're kind of, I mean, what needs to happen? I think this report is terrific. What needs to happen for people to go, yeah, I guess we do need to do something?
Yeah. The good news is that if you will take a comprehensive approach and do the sort of things that Florida's done, and by the way, I would recommend that you look at Florida as a baseline, not as an endpoint. Mm-hmm. Florida's reforms were state-of-the-art in 1999, but now that we know that they've worked to the degree they have, the question isn't should we do what Florida did, it's how much further should we go? You know, the good news is that it is perfectly possible for you to radically improve the scores of all Wisconsin students, especially minority students. That's why we call the report Giving the Most to Students with the Least.
Dr. Matthew Ladner from the Goldwater Institute, interesting results indeed, and maybe a warning for a state's educational system at risk, shall we say. Dr. Ladner, we appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Back after the break, everyone. Stay with us. You're listening to Upfront. People, some things are simply better than others. A piece of cake over broccoli, CDs over 8 tracks, or a better computer over the one you have now. Kettler Computers can get you there. Not with the cake or CDs, the computer. They do networking, PC or Mac upgrades, repairs, high-speed internet, email, software, printers, virus removal and protection. All of it for residential or business. And for Friday freebies, they're giving away a free 2 GB flash drive or free antivirus setup, absolutely free. It's better with Kettler. Quick, thorough, professional, better. Kettler Computers, 850-3083, 850-3083. As WIBA's Dick Alpert reported, police in Silver Spring, Maryland say a man who took several people hostage at gunpoint at the headquarters of the Discovery Channel has been shot by police, and the hostages have been freed. For more on this story, we go live to our Clear Channel Washington correspondent, Tim Staskowitz. Tim, what's the update on this story?
Well, good afternoon, Brian. I can confirm for you that James J. Lee is dead. Police did shoot him about an hour ago outside of the Discovery Channel headquarters building in Silver Spring, Maryland, which is about 10 miles outside of Washington, D.C. They did so after determining they had been in negotiations with him for about two and a half hours prior to them shooting him. Throughout those negotiations, he was experiencing what police call a wide range of emotions, and that caused them to believe that the hostages were in imminent danger, and so they did take him out about an hour ago. Now the three hostages are safe. They have been removed from the building, and supposedly they are safe. Now the police are still going through the building because they feel that there may be additional explosive devices that the gunman placed around the building.
any sense of what caused this to happen? Obviously, it sounds as though James J. Lee was unstable. Any sense of what's going on here?
Yeah, he was mentally unstable, according to sources. I know that they spoke with some family members, different news organizations here in the area. He was actually arrested outside of the same Discovery Channel building, which is the headquarters for the Discovery Channel, back in 2008, in February of 2008, and for protesting. Same deal. And he had protested outside of the building several times since then. Today, unfortunately, he decided to go in armed with a gun and with several explosive devices. Now, what he was protesting, we're not entirely sure, but what we can ascertain from that is the fact that he was concerned about the cruelty to animals. He had actually sent out a manifesto, if you will. Now, whether or not this manifesto was just a general manifesto just over the past couple of months, or whether it was specific to the incident that happened today, we're not sure. But there were a number of demands that he had for the Discovery Channel as far as what they should be broadcasting. You know, they should be broadcasting Save the Planet messages. He was more concerned over animal welfare than he was human welfare. One of the things that he wanted out there was for people to be able to restrict the birth rate, the human birth rate, on the planet Earth. So,
Tim, in some ways, amazing that there weren't more hurt or more involved in this situation. This is a building where hundreds of people work.
Yeah, about 1,800 people, 1,900 people over in Silver Spring. And Silver Spring is actually, even though it is a suburb of Washington, D.C., it is built up pretty well. Mm-hmm. I've been over there. It's almost urbanized, if you will. There's a Washington subway metro station about a block and a half away from there. By the way, that never shut down. They did a great job of keeping the trains running back and forth through there. They did shut down about a square mile radius around this building, so traffic has been an all-time nightmare in D.C. this afternoon in and around D.C. But you're right. When it happened, I guess an email went out to employees. They told them either to evacuate the building or move to higher floors, which is what happened. There was a daycare. There is a daycare on site at this Discovery Channel building, and we learned early on, thankfully, that there were almost 100 children in this daycare, but thankfully they were evacuated and moved to a McDonald's down the road, and that's where they you know, held on to them, until parents were able to come and pick them up and then get out of the area. So it's a miracle that nobody was hurt, in this incident today, I guess they had one heck of an evacuation plan.
Tim, the story at this hour, the suspect is now dead, and we will spend, I'm sure, the next several days learning a lot more.
I believe so, Brian.
Live from Washington, our Clear Channel correspondent, Tim Staskowitz. Tim, thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
That story again, police in Silver Spring, Maryland, a man who took several people hostage at gunpoint, shot dead by police. The hostages have now been freed. Whew. It's you see these things play out, and this thing actually played out in a relatively short period of time here. So we appreciate the ability to talk to somebody live in the area to know what's going on. We'll take a quick break. Back after this break, you're listening to Upfront. You know, people, the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, dropped a little bomb there a couple of days ago. She said, unfortunately, there's a great deal of confusion about what is in the health care reform law and what isn't. She tells an ABC News radio interviewer on Monday. So, she says, we have a lot of re-education to do. Re-education. We need to be re-educated, apparently. We just don't understand. We're too dumb to realize how fabulous Obamacare is. I mean, the reason I mention this is it just shows you. It's so obvious that they think they are so right. They passed these, you know, couple thousand page bills in the middle of the night. Most of the Congress admits, all of the Congress admits, they didn't read the final document. But it's not Congress that's confused, even though they didn't read it. It's us that's confused. We watched that debate rage for a year and a half. And whose fault is it? It's apparently our fault. We just don't get how wonderful they're being to us. All the tax increases, the worse health care, the punishment to seniors in this, the $500 million worth of cuts to Medicaid. And, of course, they're out trying to buy everyone off now. A million seniors, as of Monday, received $250 rebate checks to help them fill the donut hole, the kind of a little pre-election bribe there. Sebelius claims by the end of the year, as many as 4 million Part D participants may get checks. This is how this gets to my interview earlier. They, with David Limbaugh, which I had at the top of the show, they just want to believe they're so right and you're so wrong that you have to be re-educated. Those are her words, not mine. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, her words, you need to be re-educated. Well, here's a little re-education for the Obama administration. Polling out today, voters prefer Republicans to Democrats on 7 of 9 key election issues, including an 11-point margin on the economy, according to a new poll from Gallup and USA Today. The only two winning issues for the Democrats were the environment, with a 23-point margin, and health care, which had only a 1-point margin, a far cry, Gallup says, from the double-digit leads more common historically for the blue team on health. The Republican advantage spanned from a 3-point to a 24-point margin and included the issues of terrorism, where Republicans lead 55-31, immigration, where Republicans lead 50-35, federal spending by the same margin, and the economy by 11 points, the situation in Afghanistan, jobs, and corruption in government. The poll was taken from August 27th to August 30th. Re-education's the word. That's what we need. On line one is John. John, welcome to Upfront. John, are you feeling a need for re-education?
Hey, Brian, I love you and Vicky.
Thank you so much.
Hey, you know what? It's interesting to use the word re-education because Stalin used the word re-education when he sent everybody to Siberia.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And Pol Pot in Cambodia, when he exterminated one-third of the people in Cambodia, he was re-educating them also.
Well, the Secretary Sebelius wouldn't use the word Siberia. The frozen tundra seems to be a word she wants to use. But isn't it amazing that these people, I mean, this is part and parcel of this administration. They'll look down their nose at you, and if you don't agree with them politically, what do you need now, in their words, a re-education?
I think it's frightening. I think I can't wait for November, because I can't wait till the American people send a message to these people that they will finally understand.
John, I certainly hope that you're right, and thanks so much for your call. On line two is Dave. Dave, welcome to Upfront. Do you need a re-education?
Well, I want to thank the last caller. I was trying to remember where I heard the term re-education. It's re-education camps, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
I listened to him, and then I remembered where I heard that before. You got to get your mind right, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, thanks.
Dave, thanks for your call. This is where we're at with this administration. The public has moved beyond them. They are now losing independent voters in double digits. A new poll out yesterday from Gallup, separate of the poll we're talking about today, a new poll out from Gallup yesterday showing that the Republicans have now taken an, what this is Gallup's words, an unprecedented 10-point lead on the generic ballot. The generic ballot being amongst folks who, if you give them no names of candidates, just say Republican or Democrat, they prefer Republicans. Republicans lead by 51 to 41 among registered voters in Gallup's weekly tracking poll of 2010 congressional voting preferences. It is the GOP's largest lead so far this year, and its largest in Gallup's history of tracking midterm generic ballot for Congress. The Republican leads of 6, 7, and 10 points this month are all higher than any other previous midterm Republican advantage in Gallup's history of tracking the generic ballot, which dates back to 1942. But it turns out we just don't get it. We need to be re-educated.